Where's the world's largest offshore wind farm? And what's all this talk about floating LNG terminals? Welcome to the Climate Recap from the Bakersfield Climate Corner, your go-to place for international and U.S.-based climate news. I'm Becky Hogue, a climate communicator. We have a rare Saturday episode today to make up for missing the Friday one. Today is Saturday, September 3rd. Let's jump right into today's news. Let's start with some extreme weather events. The World Meteorological Organization predicts that we will see our first triple La Niña this century. La Niñas, which are the colder part of the reoccurring El Niño Southern Oscillation Oceanic and Atmospheric Cycle, usually show up every 2 to 7 years and last less than a year. It leads to more rain in places like Australia and more drought in places like Eastern Africa. Sounds familiar? The La Niña we are in now started in September 2020, making it a double La Niña, and has resulted in the worst drought the Horn of Africa has experienced in 40 years. The WMO gives it a 70% chance that the La Niña will stick around through September to November of this year. The group says there is a 55% chance that the La Niña will persist from December 2022 to February 2023. Research shows that climate change will make extreme La Niña and El Niño events twice as frequent as they used to be, meaning one will show up at least once a decade by the end of the century. Speaking of the Horn of Africa drought, Somalia is seeing droughts that used to come every 10 years, now every 4 years. Climate change is changing the jet stream, causing a high-pressure system to sit over the region for longer. This gives communities little time to recover before the next one hits. Additionally, the Russian-Ukrainian war has reduced food availability for basics like wheat. So climate change plus the war means it's expected that 50 million people across the country won't have enough to eat by the end of the year. The U.S. has sent more than $700 million in aid, and Europe has sent more than $180 million, but this is still way less than what is truly needed to help the problem. It's particularly difficult to get aid to those who need it most, because half of Somalia is run by the terrorist group Al-Shabaab, which has been known to kill aid workers. The bottom line is Somalia has contributed next to nothing to climate change, but it's seeing some of the most deadly impacts. Wealthy countries promised to provide $100 billion to developing countries every year starting in 2020, but have yet to follow through with that promise. The UN Climate Conference, COP27 in November, will be the first COP to take place in Africa, and the continent is preparing to push wealthy countries to increase and follow through with their promises. Meanwhile, Zimbabwe is in process of moving about 400 elephants, 2,000 impalas, 70 giraffes, 50 buffaloes, 50 wildebeest, 50 zebras, 50 elands, 10 lions, and a pack of 10 wild dogs from Zimbabwe's Save Valley Conservancy to 3 conservancies in the north to rescue them from prolonged drought. Called Project Rewild Zimbezi, it's the largest animal capture and relocation effort attempted in Zimbabwe in 60 years. It doubles as a rewilding effort in the Zambezi River Valley. In the U.S., Death Valley could reach 125 degrees Fahrenheit or 51.7 degrees Celsius on Labor Day Monday as the Southwest and Great Basin experience a heat wave this long weekend. Excess heat warnings were placed in Arizona, Nevada, and Central and Southern California earlier this week and will likely continue through Tuesday. We have one climate study today. A new Pew Research survey of 19 countries shows that 3 out of 4 people in those countries consider climate change a major threat, more than misinformation, more than cyber attacks, more than the global economy, and more than the risk of another pandemic. The percentage of people concerned has grown from 2013 to 2022 in all of these countries except for South Korea, which has seen a decline in concern from 85% to 82%. That being said, Korea still has the highest percentage of citizens who are concerned about the climate crisis. The countries with the biggest opinion change from 2013 to 2022 are the UK, which grew from 48% to 75%, and France, which grew from 54% to 81%. 54% are now concerned in the US, compared to 40% in 2013. The US doesn't align with the median opinion, though, with its citizens believing all the other issues I listed earlier are more of a concern than climate change. Time for some climate victories. The North Sea offshore wind farm Hornsea 2 took the title of the world's largest offshore wind farm when it came online this week. Its 55 miles off the coast of Yorkshire is made of 165 turbines and can generate enough energy to power more than 1.4 million homes, which is about the number of homes in Manchester. The project was developed by Ørsted. The previous record holder was its neighbor, Hornsea 1. UK offshore wind is currently the cheapest form of energy production, even cheaper than onshore wind and solar right now. This farm will produce energy that is 9 times cheaper than current gas prices. Unfortunately, consumers won't feel any benefit until April 2023 and won't see any full benefits until April 2024 because Orsted delayed filing its contract of difference. The company won't make any windfall profits from surging costs or anything because Orsted hedged the output of the wind farm at an even lower price than the one in its contract. The company's spokesperson said, quote, "The company decided to delay the subsidy and sell power forward ahead of the contract's start as a way to have stable revenues for a longer period overall." And in the U.S., Democrat Mary Peltola just became the first Alaska Native elected to Congress and the first woman to hold Alaska's House seat. Alaska held a special election after its House of Representatives member passed away. This means Peltola will only be in office until the rest of the year, when she'll have to go through this process again. All these firsts could be due to the state using a ranked voting system, and of course due to who Peltola is. In a huge fishing state, Peltola is actively pro-fish. She wants to focus on the drivers of the salmon population decline, which includes climate change. Okay, let's get through some climate fails. G20 climate talks in Indonesia Wednesday did not result in any climate target agreements due to people being obsessed with the language and distracted by the war in Ukraine. China objected to any previous agreed-upon language in the Glasgow Climate Pact and previous G20 meetings. What are we doing, y'all? A new analysis by the International Energy Agency and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development revealed that global fossil fuel subsidies doubled to $697 billion, or £604.3 billion, in 2021 as governments tried to reduce gas prices. This is based on 51 key countries representing 85% of global energy use, so the subsidy count could be higher. And this was happening when fossil fuel companies were making record profits. The subsidy amount used to artificially lower gas prices tripled from 2020 to 2021 to $531 billion. Subsidies for oil and gas production hit a record level at $64 billion, despite the IEA saying that same year the world should not construct any new oil and gas projects if we want to make our climate goals. In 2009, G20 countries pledged to phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies, but there wasn't any strict timeline for that. G7 countries recently put the deadline at 2025, but so far, little progress has been made. And now European nations are planning to build 20 floating terminals in total to receive liquefied natural gas, or LNG, from different countries and convert it into heating fuel in preparation for a tough winter season. Floating terminals take less time to build with less money, but operation costs are more than the terminals on land. The first terminals will likely be ready by the end of the year to be used. Scientists are concerned that these projects will lock Europe and fossil fuel producing countries into long-term fossil fuel use. As I said earlier, the IEA says that we shouldn't construct any new oil and gas projects if we want to keep warming below 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. And while these terminals aren't cheap to build, cheaper means $5 million. That's $10 billion or 8.7 billion pounds that could be used to accelerate clean energy development and energy efficiency adoption instead. Italy, Greece, France, the Netherlands, Croatia, Estonia, Finland, Latvia, Slovenia, and the UK all have one or more floating LNG terminal planned, according to Rystad Energy. Germany, who's planning 5 terminals, is one of the biggest proponents of the effort, which continues Chancellor Scholz's trend I talked about at the end of August 26th episode. He likes LNG. He's committed $3 billion to the effort. The Energy and Economy Minister says efforts will be made to lower methane emissions. Methane is 84 times a more potent greenhouse gas than CO2 for the first 20 years they're in the atmosphere, and these emissions usually happen in gas processes through leaks and flaring. But ultimately, doing these projects will result in a net increase in methane emissions if there were no projects, and they could jeopardize the European Union's goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by at least 55% by 2030. Speaking of which, Europe's energy crisis and supply chain bottlenecks have resulted in a 24% drop in corporate clean energy investments for the first half of this year compared to the second half of last year. Private enterprises and public institutions only announced 14.8 gigawatts of clean energy development. The giant Amazon represents 5 gigawatts of that. That's still great that they're building that much, but this year is expected to be the first annual decline since 2016. In South America, the Brazilian Amazon rainforest experienced its worst August wildfires since 2010, worse than the 2019 August fires that drew international attention. This season is 12.3% worse than 2019 and 20% worse than the month's average. The National Space Research Agency, INPE, registered 31,513 fire alerts in the first 30 days of the month. August and September are generally the worst months for Amazon wildfires. It's considered burning season in the region, which is when ranchers purposely light parts of the Amazon on fire to clear for cattle. Brazil's current president has made it easier for ranchers and corporations to get away with this behavior, which is scary because the Amazon is extremely important for biodiversity, a regional climate stabilizer, and an important carbon sink. Brazil's presidential race will be in October and could determine the fate of the country's part of the Amazon. The current president, Bolsonaro, is running for re-election against former leftist president Lula da Silva, who's the front-runner in preliminary polls. Lula recently announced he would push for a Brazil-Indonesia-Congo rainforest alliance if elected. Those are the three countries with the most rainforests. Lula's aides have already reached out to the other countries. This could definitely sway the deforestation conversation at COP27, assuming he gets elected. We have one chemical news story today. It's been 25 years since Shell left Ogoni Land in southern Nigeria, but the area, about 386 square miles of wetland, is still heavily contaminated by crude oil despite Shell putting $1 billion in cleaning it up in 2019. That effort, led by the Hydrocarbon Pollution Remediation Project, or HIPREP, was originally praised by the United Nations, but recently Bloomberg provided some information to the UN Environment Program that changed their mind. Somehow, Shell managed to make the site dirtier than it used to be with that $1 billion. Bloomberg's cleanup review shows a scene of rampant mismanagement, incompetence, waste, and lack of transparency. Contracts were awarded to firms with little cleanup experience. Bloomberg looked at six UNEP documents that included an audit of ongoing cleanup efforts, HIPREP's bidding process, and a list of recommendations for restructuring the agency. Some of this information has been shared with HIPREP and the Nigerian government. HIPREP shrugged off the claims as baseless, untrue, and unfair. Shell blames local crime on the region's environmental problems, and the Nigerian government hasn't responded to Bloomberg's request for comment. Anagi residents are angry, and they and another group of Delta villages launched an ongoing lawsuit against Shell through the UK law firm Leyday for greater accountability. This is the latest of a growing number of lawsuits against Shell by communities living in or around the Niger Delta. If you want to learn more about those efforts, check out a link in the source list. Okay, let's finish with some nuclear news. California lawmakers officially approved a plan to keep the Diablo nuclear power plant open. It involves loaning the utility company PG&E $1.4 billion. The plant was originally set to close in 2025, but nuclear advocates worried that the energy it produces, which represents 6% of the state's power, would be replaced by fossil fuels, as often happens when a nuclear plant leaves the grid. California nuclear opponents worry the plant isn't properly earthquake-proof, and California is an earthquake state. Nuclear is a powerful form of stable clean energy that can be expensive, dangerous, and take a long time to build. And that was your climate recap for Saturday, September 3rd. If you like the work I do, please follow this podcast, give it a 5-star rating, leave a review, and consider checking out the Becosphere Climate Corner YouTube channel. Remember to talk about the climate crisis every single day and to support your local news organizations. Bye for now.